Shot barreled toward the enemy soldiers, some of whom were dying to arrows from Amarun's archers. Sin could make out individual faces of the enemy. Suddenly, Kaladin's squad pulled to a halt, forming a tight group. They'd reached the small incline that Kaladin and Dalit had chosen earlier. Dalit grabbed Sin and shoved him to the very center of the formation. Kaladin's men lowered spears, pulling out shields as the enemy bore down on them. The charging foe used no careful formation. They didn't keep the ranks of long spears in back and short spears in front. They all just ran forward. Sen scrambled to get his shield unlatched from his back. A group of enemy spearmen rushed up to Kaladin's squad, perhaps coveting the higher ground. The 36 attackers had some cohesion, though they weren't in as tight a formation as Kaladin's squad was. The enemy seemed determined to make up for it in passion. They rushed Kaladin's line. Kaladin's team held rank, defending Sen as if he were some light eyes and they were his honor guard. The two forces met. It was over in a few eye blinks. The enemy squad pulled back, leaving two dead on the stone. Kaladin's team hadn't lost anyone. They held their bristling V formation, though one man stepped back and pulled out a bandage to wrap a thigh wound. The rest of the men closed in to fill the spot. The wounded man was hulking and thick-armed. The wound didn't look bad. He was on his feet in a moment, but didn't return to the place where he'd been. Instead, he moved down to one end of the V formation, a more protected spot. The battlefield was chaos. The two armies mingled indistinguishably. Many of the squads broke apart, members rushing from one encounter to another. They moved like hunters, groups of three or four seeking lone individuals, then brutally falling on them. Kaladin's team held its ground, engaging only enemy squads that got too close.
Oh, is this what a battle really is?
Sen's practice had trained him for long ranks of men, shoulder to shoulder, not this frenzied intermixing, this brutal pandemonium. Why didn't Mor hold formation?
The soldiers are all gone. We're fighting in a real battle at the Shattered Plains. No wonder Kaladin wants to get his squad there.
Spears flashed on all sides. It was difficult to tell friend from foe, despite the emblems on breastplates and colored paint on shields. The battlefield broke down into hundreds of small groups, like 1,000 different wars happening at the same time. After the first few exchanges, Dalit took Sen by the shoulder and placed him in the rank at the very bottom of the V pattern. Sen, however, was worthless. When Kaladin's team engaged enemy squads, all of his training fled him. It took everything he had to just remain there, holding his spear outward and trying to look threatening. For the better part of an hour, Kaladin's squad held their small hill, working as a team shoulder to shoulder. Kaladin often left his position at the front, rushing this way and that, banging his spear on his shield in a strange rhythm.
Those are signals.
Kaladin's squad moved from the V-shape into a ring. It was nearly impossible to hear a single person's voice, but the sharp clang of the spear against the metal plate on Kaladin's shield was clear. Each time they changed formations, Dalit grabbed Sen by the shoulder and steered him. Kaladin's team didn't chase down stragglers. They remained on the defensive, and while several of the men in Kaladin's team took wounds, none of them fell. The squad was too intimidating for the smaller groups, and larger enemy units retreated after a few exchanges seeking easier foes. Eventually, something changed. Kaladin turned, watching the tides of the battle with discerning brown eyes. He raised his spear and smacked his shield in a quick rhythm he hadn't used before. Dalit grabbed Sen by the arm and pulled him away from the small hill.
Why abandon it now?
Just then, the larger body of Amaram's force broke, the men scattering. Sen hadn't realized how poorly the battle in this quarter had been going for his side. As Kaladin's team retreated, they passed many wounded and dying, and Sen grew nauseated. Soldiers were sliced open, their insides spilling out. He didn't have time for horror. The retreat quickly turned into a rout. Kaladin beat his shield again. The squad changed direction, heading eastward. There, Sen saw, a larger group of Amarin soldiers was holding. But the enemy had seen the ranks break, and that made them bold. They rushed forward in clusters, like wild axe hounds hunting stray hogs. Before Kaladin's team was halfway across the field of dead and dying, a large group of enemy soldiers intercepted them. Kaladin reluctantly banged his shield. His squad slowed. Sen felt his heart begin to thump faster and faster. Nearby, a squad of Amarin soldiers was consumed. The enemies used their spears like skewers, killing men on the ground like kremlings. Kaladin's men met the enemy, bodies shoved on all sides, and Sen was spun about. In a jumble of friend and foe, dying and killing, Sen grew overwhelmed. So many men running in so many directions. He panicked, scrambling for safety. A group of soldiers nearby wore Aleki uniforms, Kaladin's squad. Sen ran for them, but when some turned toward him, Sen was terrified to realize he didn't recognize them. This wasn't Kaladin's squad, but a small group of unfamiliar soldiers holding an uneven, broken line. Wounded and terrified, they scattered as soon as an enemy squad got close. Sen froze, holding his spear in a sweaty hand. The enemy soldiers charged right for him. His instincts urged him to flee, yet he had seen so many men picked off one at a time.
I have to stand.
I have to face them. I can't run. I can't!
He stabbed his spear at the lead soldier. The man casually knocked the weapon aside with his shield, then drove his short spear into Sen's thigh. The pain was hot. So hot that the blood squirting out on his leg felt cold by comparison. The soldier yanked the weapon free. Sen stumbled backward, dropping his spear and shield. He fell to rocky ground, splashing in someone else's blood. His foe raised his spear high, a looming silhouette against a stark blue sky, ready to ram it into Sen's heart. And then he was there. Squad leader, Storm-blessed. Kaladin's spear came as if out of nowhere, narrowly deflecting the blow that was to have killed Sen. Kaladin set himself in front of Sen, alone, facing down six spearmen. He didn't flinch. He charged. It happened so quickly. Kaladin swept the feet from beneath the man who had stabbed Sen. Even as that man fell, Kaladin reached up and flipped a knife from one of the sheaths tied about his spear. His hand snapped, knife flashing, and hit him the thigh of a second foe. A third man froze, looking at his fallen allies. Kaladin shoved past the wounded enemy and slammed his spear into the gut of the third man. A fourth man fell with a knife to the eye.
When did Kaladin grab that knife?
He spun between the last two, his spear a blur, wielding it like a quarterstaff. For a moment, Sen thought he could see something surrounding the squad leader, a warping of the air, like the wind itself become visible.
I've lost a lot of blood. It's flowing so quickly.
Foes all down, Kaladin turned and knelt beside Sen. The squad leader set aside his spear and whipped the white strip of cloth from his pocket, then efficiently wrapped it tight around Sen's leg. Kaladin worked with the ease of one who had bound wounds dozens of times before.
Kaladin, sir!
Sen pointed at one of the soldiers Kaladin had wounded. The enemy man held his leg as he stumbled to his feet. In a second, however, mountainous Dalit was there, shoving the foe with his shield. Dalit didn't kill the wounded man, but let him stumble away unarmed. The rest of the squad arrived and formed a ring around Kaladin, Dalit, and Sen. Kaladin stood up, raising his spear to his shoulder. Dalit handed him back his knives, retrieved from the fallen foes.
Had me worried there, sir, running off like that.
I knew you'd follow. Raise the red banner. Sen, Corridor, you're going back with the boy. Dalit, hold here. Amram's line is bulging in this direction. We should be safe soon.
And you, sir?
Kaladin looked across the field. A pocket had opened in the enemy forces, and a man rode there on a white horse, swinging about him with a wicked mace. He wore full plate armor, polished in gleaming silver.
A shard bearer?
No, thank the Stormfather. Just a light-eyed officer. Shard bearers are far too valuable to waste on a minor border dispute.
Kaladin watched the light eyes with a seething hatred. It was the same hatred Sen's father had shown when he'd spoken of Chul rustlers, or the hatred Sen's mother would display when someone mentioned Kusiri, who had run off with a cobbler's son.
Sir, subsquads 2 and 3, pincer pattern. We're taking a Bright Lord off his throne.
You sure that's wise, sir? We've got wounded.
That's one of Hela's officers. He might be the one.
You don't know that, sir.
Regardless, he's a battalion lord. If we kill an officer that high, we're all but guaranteed to be in the next group sent to the Shattered Plains. We're taking him. Imagine it, Dalit. real soldiers. A war camp with discipline and light eyes with integrity. A place where our fighting will mean something.
Dalit nodded. Kaladin waved to a group of his soldiers, then they raced across the field. A smaller group of soldiers, including Dalit, waited behind with the wounded. One of those, a thin man with black Galethi hair speckled with a handful of blonde hairs marking some foreign blood, pulled a long red ribbon from his pocket and attached it to his spear. He held the spear aloft, letting the ribbon flap in the wind.
It's a call for runners to carry our wounded off the field. We'll have you out of here soon. You were brave standing against those six.
Oh, fleeing seems stupid. So many wounded on the field, how can we think that the runners will come for us?
Squad leader Kaladin bribes them. They'll usually only carry off light eyes, but there are more runners than there are wounded light eyes. The squad leader puts most of his pay into the bribes.
The squad is different.
Told you.
Not because of luck. Because of training.
That's part of it. Part of it's because we know if we get hurt, Kaladin will get us off the battlefield.
Dalit paused, looking over his shoulder. As Kaladin had predicted, Amarim's line was surging back, recovering. The mounted enemy light eyes from before was energetically laying about with his mace. A group of his honor guard moved to one side, engaging Kaladin's sub-squads. The light eyes turned his horse. He wore an open-fronted helm that had sloping sides and a large set of plumes on the top. Sen couldn't make out his eye color, but he knew it would be blue or green, maybe yellow or light gray. He was a bright lord, chosen at birth by the heralds, marked for rule. He impassively regarded those who fought nearby. Then, one of Kaladin's knives took him in the right eye. The bright lord fell back off the saddle as Kaladin somehow slipped through the lines and leaped upon him, spear raised.
Aye, it's part training, but it's mostly him. He fights like a storm, that one, and thinks twice as fast as other men. The way he moves sometime.
Oh, he bound my leg.
He knows a lot about wounds. He can read glyphs, too. He's a strange man for a lowly, dark-eyed spearman, our squad leader is. But you should save your strength, son. The squad leader won't be pleased if we lose you, not after what he paid to get you.
Why?
Almost everyone around them was an ally, but Dalit still watched to make sure no enemy soldiers tried to strike at Kaladin's wounded.
Why, Dalit? Why bring me into this squad? Why me?
It's just how he is. Hates the thought of young kids like you, barely trained, going to battle. Every now and again, he grabs one and brings him into a squad. A good half dozen of our men were once like you. I think you all remind him of someone.
Sen glanced at his leg. Pain sprang like small orange hands with overly long fingers were crawling around him, reacting to his agony. They began turning away, scurrying in other directions, seeking other wounded. His pain was fading, his leg, his whole body feeling numb. He leaned back, staring up at the sky.
That's odd. There shouldn't be thunder. The sky's cloudless.
Sen turned, shocked out of his stupor. Galloping directly toward them was a massive black horse, bearing a rider in gleaming armor that seemed to radiate light. The armor was seamless. No chain underneath. Just smaller plates, incredibly intricate. The figure wore an unornamented full helm, and the plate was gilded. He carried a massive sword in one hand, fully as long as a man was tall. It wasn't a simple straight sword. It was curved, and the side that wasn't sharp was ridged like flowing waves. Etchings covered its length. It was beautiful, like a work of art. Sen had never seen a shard bearer, but he knew immediately what this was. How could he ever have mistaken a simple armored light eyes for one of these majestic creatures?
Didn't Dalit claim there would be no shard bearers on this battlefield?
Vorma!
Sen just sat where he was. He couldn't have stood, not with that leg wound. He felt so lightheaded. How much blood had he lost? You could barely think. Either way, he couldn't fight. You didn't fight something like this. Sun gleamed against that plate armor and that gorgeous, intricate, sinuous sword. It was like like the Almighty himself, had taken form to walk the battlefield. And why would you want to fight the Almighty? Sen closed his eyes.
Ten orders. We were loved once. Why have you forsaken us, Almighty? Shard of my soul, where have you gone?
Collected on the second day of Kakash, year 1171, 5 seconds before death. Subject was a light-eyed woman in her third decade.
Kaladin's stomach growled as he reached through the bars and accepted the bowl of slop. He pulled the small bowl, more a cup, between the bars, then grimaced as the caged wagon began to roll again. The sludgy gray slop was made from overcooked tallow grain, and this batch was flecked with crusted bits of yesterday's meal. Revolting though it was all he would get. He began to eat, legs hanging out between the bars, watching the scenery pass. The other slaves in his cage clutched their bowls protectively, afraid that someone might steal from them. One of them tried to steal Kaladin's food on the first day. He nearly broke the man's arm. Now, everyone left him alone. Suited him just fine. He ate with his fingers, careless of the dirt. He'd stopped noticing dirt months ago. He hated that he felt some of that same paranoia that the others showed. How could he not? After 8 months of beatings, deprivation, and brutality, he fought down the paranoia. He wouldn't become like them. Even if he'd given up everything else, even if all had been taken from him, even if there was no longer hope of escape, this one thing he would retain. He was a slave, but he didn't need to think like one. He finished the slop quickly. There were 10 slaves in the wagon, all men, scraggly bearded and dirty. It was one of 3 wagons in their caravan through the unclaimed hills. The sun blazed reddish-white on the horizon, like the hottest part of a smith's fire. It lit the framing clouds with a spray of color, paint thrown carelessly on a canvas. Covered in tall, monotonously green grass, the hills seemed endless. On a nearby mound, a small figure flitted around the plants, dancing like a fluttering insect. The figure was amorphous, vaguely translucent. Windspren were devious spirits who had a penchant for staying where they weren't wanted. He'd hoped that this one had gotten bored and left, but as Kaladin tried to toss his wooden bowl aside, he found that it stuck to his fingers. The windspren zipped by, nothing more than a ribbon of light without form.
Gah!
Kaladin tugged on the bowl. Windspren often played pranks like that. He pried at the bowl, and it eventually came free. He tossed it to one of the other slaves. The man quickly began to lick at the remnants of the slop.
Hey!
Kaladin looked to the side. A slave with dark skin and matted hair was crawling up to him, timid, as if expecting Kaladin to be angry.
You're not like the others.
The slave's black eyes glanced upward toward Kaladin's forehead, which bore 3 brands. The first 2 made a glyph pair, given to him 8 months ago on his last day in Amaram's army. The 3rd was fresh, given to him by his most recent master, Shash. The last glyph read, "Dangerous." The slave had his hand hidden behind his rags.
A knife?
No. That was ridiculous. None of these slaves could have hidden a weapon. The leaves hidden in Kaladin's belt were as close as one could get. But old instincts could not be banished easily, so Kaladin watched that hand.
I heard the guards talking.
The slave shuffled a little closer. He had a twitch that made him blink too frequently.
You tried to escape before, they said. You have escaped before. Look.
The slave moved his hand out from behind his rags and revealed his bowl of slop. It was half full.
Take me with you next time. I'll give you this, half my food from now on until we get away. Please.
As he spoke, He attracted a few hunger spren. They looked like brown flies that flitted around the man's head, almost too small to see. Kaladin turned away, looking out at the endless hills and their shifting, moving grasses. He rested one arm across the bars and placed his head against it, legs still hanging out.
Well?
You're an idiot. If you gave me half your food, you'd be too weak to escape if I were to flee. Which I won't. It doesn't work.
But
10 times. 10 escape attempts in 8 months, fleeing from 5 different masters. And how many of them worked?
Well, I mean, you're still here.
8 months.
8 months as a slave, 8 months of slop and beatings. It might as well have been an eternity. He barely remembered the army anymore.
You can't hide as a slave, not with that brand on your forehead. Now, I got away a few times, but they always found me, and then back I went.
Once, men had called him lucky, storm-blessed. Those had been lies. If anything, Kaladin had bad luck. Soldiers were a superstitious sort, and though he'd initially resisted that way of thinking, it was growing harder and harder. Every person he had ever tried to protect had ended up dead, time and time again. And now, here he was, in an even worse situation than where he'd begun. It was better not to resist. This was his lot, and he was resigned to it. There was a certain power in that, a freedom. The freedom of not having to care. The slave eventually realized Kaladin wasn't going to say anything further, and so he retreated, eating his slop. The wagons continued to roll, fields of green extending in all directions. The area around the rattling wagons was bare, however. When they approached, the grass pulled away, each individual stalk withdrawing into a pinprick hole in the stone. After the wagons moved on, the grass timidly poked back out and stretched its blades toward the air. And so, the cages moved along what appeared to be an open rock highway, cleared just for them. This far into the unclaimed hills, the high storms were incredibly powerful. The plants had learned to survive. That's what you had to do. Learn to survive. Brace yourself. Weather the storm. Kaladin caught a whiff of another sweaty, unwashed body. He looked suspiciously to the side, expecting that same slave to be back. It was a different man this time, though. He had a long black beard stuck with bits of food and snarled with dirt. Kaladin kept his own beard shorter, allowing Tlakev's mercenaries to hack it down periodically. Like Kaladin, the slave wore the remains of a brown sack tied with a rag, and he was dark-eyed, of course. Perhaps a deep dark green, though with dark eyes it was hard to tell. They all looked brown or black unless you caught them in the right light. The newcomer cringed away, raising his hands. He had a rash on one hand, the skin just faintly discolored. He'd likely approached because he'd seen Kaladin respond to the other man. The slaves had been frightened of him since the first day, but they were also obviously curious. Kaladin turned away. The slave hesitantly sat down.
Mind if I ask how you became a slave, friend? Can't help wondering. We're all wondering.
Judging by the accent and the dark hair, the man was a Lethi, like Kaladin. Most of the slaves were. Kaladin didn't reply to the question.
Me? I stole a herd of Chul. But taking one Chul, they might have just beaten me, but a whole herd. 17 head.
They were a sorry lot, even for slaves. Weak, sickly, underfed. Some, like Kaladin, were repeat runaways, though Kaladin was the only one with a Shash brand. They were the most worthless of a worthless caste, purchased at a steep discount. They were probably being taken for resale in a remote place where men were desperate for labor. There were plenty of small, independent cities along the coast of the unclaimed hills. Places where Voran rules governing the use of slaves were just a distant rumor. Coming this way was dangerous. These lands were ruled by nobody, and by cutting across open land and staying away from established trade routes, Tlakev could easily run afoul of unemployed mercenaries. Men who had no honor and no fear of slaughtering a slave master and his slaves in order to steal a few chulls and wagons. Men who had no honor. Were there men who had honor?
No. Honor died 8 months ago.
So what did you do to get made a slave?
How did you get caught?
Odd thing, that. It was a woman, of course. Should have known she'd sell me.
Shouldn't have stolen Chol's. Too slow. Horses would have been better.
Horses? What do you think, me a madman? If I'd been caught stealing those, I'd have been hanged. Chol's, at least, only earned me a slave's brand.
Kaladin glanced to the side. This man's forehead brand was older than Kaladin's. The skin around the scar faded to white.
What is that glyph bear?
Sas Marome.
It was the High Lord's district where the man had originally been branded. The man looked up with shock.
Hey, you know glyphs? You must have an even better story than I thought, friend.
Kaladin stared out over those grasses blowing in the mild breeze. Whenever the wind picked up, the more sensitive of the grass stalks shrank down into their burrows, leaving the landscape patchy, like the coat of a sickly horse. That windspren was still there, moving between patches of grass. How long had it been following him? At least a couple of months now. That was downright odd. Maybe it was the same one. They were impossible to tell apart.
Well, why are you here?
There are many reasons why I'm here. Failures, crimes, betrayals. Probably the same for most every one of us.
Persistent coughing, accompanied by an excess of phlegm and fevered mumbling at night. Sounds like the grindings.
Well, perhaps I should ask a different question. Be more specific. That's what my mother always said. Say what you mean and ask for what you want. What's the story of you getting that first brand of yours?
I killed the Light Eyes.
I'm surprised they let you live.
Killing the Light Eyes isn't why I was made a slave. It's the one I didn't kill that's the problem.
How's that?
Kaladin shook his head, then stopped answering the talkative man's questions. The man eventually wandered to the front of the wagon's cage and sat down, staring at his bare feet. Hours later, Kaladin still sat in his place, idly fingering the glyphs on his forehead. This was his life, day in and day out, riding in these cursed wagons. His first brands had healed long ago, but the skin around the Shash brand was red, irritated, and crusted with scabs. It throbbed, almost like a second heart. It hurt even worse than the burn had when he grabbed the heated handle of a cooking pot as a child. Lessons drilled into Kaladin by his father whispered in the back of his brain, giving the proper way to care for a burn.
Apply a salve to prevent infection, wash once daily.
Those memories weren't a comfort, they were an annoyance. He didn't have a four-leaf sap or Lister's oil. He didn't even have water for the washing. The parts of the wound that had scabbed over pulled at his skin, making his forehead feel tight. He could barely pass a few minutes without scrunching up his brow and irritating the wound. He'd grown accustomed to reaching up and wiping away the streaks of blood that trickled from the cracks. His right forearm was smeared with it. If he'd had a mirror, he could probably have spotted tiny red rotspren gathering around the wound. The sun set in the west, but the wagons kept rolling. Violet Salas peeked over the horizon to the east, seeming hesitant at first, as if making sure the sun had vanished. It was a clear night, and the stars shivered high above. Taln's scar, a swath of deep red stars that stood out vibrantly from the twinkling white ones, was high in the sky this season. Once, Kaladin would have been quick to go help, but something within him had changed. So many people he'd tried to help were now dead. It seemed to him, irrationally, that the man would be better off without his interference. After failing Tien and Dalit and his team, then 10 successive groups of slaves, it was hard to find the will to try again. 2 hours passed, first moon. Tlakev finally called a halt. His two brutish mercenaries climbed from their places atop their wagons, then moved to build a small fire. Lanky Taran, the serving boy, tended the chulls. The large crustaceans were nearly as big as wagons themselves. They settled down, pulling into their shells for the night with clawfuls of grain.
Soon, they were nothing more than three lumps in the darkness, barely distinguishable from boulders. Finally, Tlakayev began checking on the slaves one at a time, giving each a ladle of water, making certain his investments were healthy. Or, at least, as healthy as could be expected for this lot. Tlakayev started with the first wagon, and Kaladin, still sitting, pushed his fingers into his makeshift belt, checking on the leaves he'd hidden there. The stiff, dried husks were rough against his skin. He still wasn't certain what he was going to do with them. He'd grabbed them on a whim during one of the sessions when he'd been allowed out of the wagon to stretch his legs. He doubted anyone else in the caravan knew how to recognize Blackbane. Narrow leaves on a trefoil prong. So it hadn't been too much of a risk. Absently, he took the leaves out and rubbed them between forefinger and palm. They had to dry before reaching their potency. Why did he carry them? Did he mean to give them to Tlakayev and get revenge? Or were they a contingency to be retained in case things got too bad, too unbearable?
Surely I haven't fallen that far.
It was just more likely his instinct of securing a weapon when he saw one, no matter how unusual. The landscape was dark. Sala's was the smallest and dimmest of the moons, and while her violet coloring had inspired countless poets, she didn't do much to help you see your hand in front of your face.
Oh! What's that?
A translucent figure, just a handspan tall, peeked up from over the edge of the floor near Kaladin. She climbed up and into the wagon, as if scaling some high plateau. The windspren had taken the shape of a young woman. Larger spren could change shapes and sizes, with an angular face and long, flowing hair that faded into mist behind her head. She, Kaladin couldn't help but think of the windspren as a she, was formed of pale blues and whites, and wore a simple, flowing white dress of a girlish cut that came down to mid-calf. Like the hair, it faded to mist at the very bottom. Her feet, hands, and face were crisply distinct, and she had the hips and bust of a slender woman. Kaladin frowned at the spirit. Spren were all around. He just ignored them most of the time. But this one was an oddity. The windspren walked upward, as if climbing an invisible staircase. She reached a height where she could stare at Kaladin's hand, so he closed his fingers around the black leaves. She walked around his fist in a circle. Although she glowed like an afterimage from looking at the sun, her form provided no real illumination. She bent down, looking at his hand from different angles, like a child expecting to find a hidden piece of candy.
What is it? You can show me. I won't tell anyone. Is it a treasure? Have you cut off a piece of the knight's cloak and tucked it away? Is it the heart of a beetle, so tiny yet powerful?
He said nothing, causing the spren to pout. She floated up, hovering, though she had no wings, and looked him in the eyes.
Kaladin, why must you ignore me?
What did you say?
She smiled mischievously, then sprang away, her figure blurring into a long white ribbon of blue-white light. She shot between the bars, twisting and warping in the air, like a strip of cloth caught in the wind, and darted beneath the wagon.
Storm you!
Kaladin leaped to his feet.
Spirit, what did you say? Repeat that!
Spren didn't use people's names. Spren weren't intelligent. The larger ones, like Windspren or Riverspren, could mimic voices and expressions, but they didn't actually think. They didn't.
Did any of you hear that?
Kaladin turned to the cage's other occupants. The roof was just high enough to let Kaladin stand. The others were lying back, waiting to get their ladle of water. He got no response. Even Kaladin's friend from earlier ignored him. The man had fallen into a stupor, staring at his feet, wiggling his toes periodically. Maybe they hadn't seen the spren. Many of the larger ones were invisible except to the person they were tormenting. Kaladin sat back down on the floor of the wagon, hanging his legs outside. The windspren had said his name, but undoubtedly she just repeated what she'd heard before.
But none of the men in this cage know my name. Maybe I'm going mad. Seeing things that aren't there, hearing voices.
He opened his hand. His grip had cracked and broken the leaves. He'd need to tuck them away to prevent further...
Those leaves look interesting. You like them a lot, don't you?
Kaladin jumped, twisting to the side. The windsprint stood in the air just beside his head, white dress rippling in a wind Kaladin couldn't feel.
How do you know my name?
The windsprint didn't answer. She walked on air over to the bars, then poked her head out, watching Tlakhev the slaver administer drinks to the last few slaves in the first wagon. She looked back at Kaladin.
Why don't you fight? You did before. Now you've stopped.
Why do you care, Spirit?
I don't know, but I do. Isn't that odd?
It is more than odd.
What did he make of a Spren that not only used his name, but seemed to remember things he had done weeks ago?
People don't eat leaves, you know, Kaladin. Or do you? I can't remember. You're so strange, stuffing some things into your mouths, leaking out other things when you don't think anyone is looking.
How do you know my name?
How do you know it?
I know it because it's mine. My parents told it to me. I don't know.
Well, I don't either.
Fine. But why are you using my name?
Because it's polite, and you are impolite.
Spren don't know what that means.
See, there. Impolite.
Kaladin blinked. Well, he was far from where he'd grown up, walking foreign stone and eating foreign food. Perhaps the Spren who lived here were different from those back home.
So, why don't you fight?
I can't fight.
You did before.
I'm so tired.
He didn't mean the physical fatigue, though 8 months eating leftovers had stolen much of the lean strength he'd cultivated while at war. He felt tired. Even when he got enough sleep, even on those rare days when he wasn't hungry, cold, or stiff from a beating.
So tired.
You have been tired before.
I failed, Spirit. Must you torment me so?
They were all dead. Sen and Dalit, and before that, Tux and the Takers. Before that, Tien. Before that, blood on his hands and the corpse of a young girl with pale skin. Some of the slaves looked at him oddly, likely thinking he was mad. Anyone could end up drawing a Spren, but you learned early that talking to one was pointless.
Am I mad?
Perhaps he should wish for that.
Madness is an escape from the pain.
Instead, it terrified him. He opened his eyes. Tlakhev was finally waddling up to Kaladin's wagon with his bucket of water. The portly, brown-eyed man walked with a very faint limp, the result of a broken leg, perhaps. He was Thalen, and all Thalen men had the same stark white beards, regardless of their age or the color of the hair on their heads, and white eyebrows. Those eyebrows grew very long, and the Thalen wore them pushed back over the ears. That made him appear to have two white streaks in his otherwise black hair. His clothing, striped trousers of black and red, with a dark blue sweater that matched the color of his knit cap, had once been fine, but it was now growing ragged. Had he once been something other than a slaver? This life, the casual buying and selling of human flesh, seemed to have an effect on men. It wearied the soul, even if it did fill one's money pouch. Tlakhev kept his distance from Kaladin, carrying his oil lantern over to inspect the sick slave at the front of the cage. Tlakhev signaled to his mercenaries, Bluth. Kaladin didn't know why he'd bothered to learn their names, wandered over. Tlakhev spoke quietly, pointing at the slave. Bluth nodded, slab-like face shadowed in the lantern light, and pulled the cudgel free from his belt. The windspren took the form of a white ribbon, then zipped over toward the sick man. She spun and twisted a few times before landing on the floor, becoming a girl again. She leaned in to inspect the man, like a curious child. Kaladin turned away and closed his eyes. Inside his mind, his father's voice responded.
To cure the grinding coughs, administer 2 handfuls of blood ivy crushed to a powder each day. If you don't have that, be certain to give the patient plenty of liquids, preferably with sugar stirred in. As long as the patient stays hydrated, he will most likely survive. The disease sounds far worse than it is.
Most likely survive.
Someone unlatched the cage door. Would they know how to help the man?
Such an easy solution. Give him water and he will live. But it doesn't matter. Best not get involved.
Men dying on the battlefield. a youthful face so familiar and dear, looking to Kaladin for salvation. A sword wound slicing open the side of a neck. The Shardbear charged through Amarim's ranks. Blood, death, failure, pain.
Can you really leave him, son? Let him die when you could have helped?
Storm it.
Stop!
The other slave scrambled back. Bluth jumped up, slamming the cage door closed and holding up his cudgel. Klakhev shied behind the mercenary, using him as cover. Kaladin closed his hand around the leaves and then raised the other to his head, wiping away a smear of blood. He crossed the small cage. Bluth glared as Kaladin knelt beside the sick man. The flickering light illuminated a long, drawn face and nearly bloodless lips. Kaladin felt the man's neck for swelling, then checked his dark brown eyes.
It's called the grinding coughs. He will live if you give him an extra ladle of water every 2 hours for 5 days or so. You'll have to force it down his throat. Mix in sugar if you have any.
Bluth scratched at his ample chin, then glanced at the shorter slaver.
Pull him out!
The wounded slave awoke as Bluth unlocked the cage. The mercenary waved Kaladin back with his cudgel, and Kaladin reluctantly withdrew. After putting away his cudgel, Bluth grabbed the slave under the arms and dragged him out, all the while trying to keep a nervous eye on Kaladin. Kaladin's last failed escape attempt had involved 20 armed slaves. His master should have executed him for that, but he had claimed Kaladin was intriguing and branded him with Shash, then sold him for a pittance. There always seemed to be a reason Kaladin survived when those he'd tried to help died. Some men might have seen this as a blessing, but he saw it as an ironic kind of torment. He'd spent some time under his previous master speaking with a slave from the West, a Sile man who had spoken of the old magic from their legends and its ability to curse people. Could that be what was happening to Kaladin?
Don't be foolish.
The cage door snapped back in place, locking. The cages were necessary. Klakhev had to protect his fragile investment from the high storms. The cages had wooden sides that could be pulled up and locked into place during the furious gales. Bluth dragged the slave over to the fire, beside the unpacked water barrel. Kaladin felt himself relax.
There. Perhaps you can still help. Perhaps there's a reason to care.
Kaladin opened his hand and looked down at the crumbled black leaves in his palm.
I don't need these. Sneaking them into Tlakiv's drink would not only be difficult, but pointless. Do I really want that slaver dead? What would that accomplish?
Kaladin snapped his head up, looking to where Bluth had deposited the sick slave. The mercenary raised his cudgel one more time. The slave's corpse slumped over in the darkness. Bluth casually picked it up and slung it over his shoulder.
No!
Kaladin slammed his hands against the bars. Tlakhev stood warming himself by the fire.
Storm you! He could have lived, you bastard!
Tlakhev glanced at him. Then, leisurely, the slaver walked over, straightening his deep blue-knit cap.
He would have gotten you all sick, you see? I will not lose an entire wagon for one man.
He's past the spreading stage. If any of us were going to catch it, we'd have done so by now.
Hope that you don't. I think he was past saving.
I told you otherwise.
And I should believe you, deserter. A man with eyes that smolder and hate. You would kill me. I care not. So long as you are strong when it is time for sales. You should bless me for saving you from that man's sickness.
I'll bless your cairn when I pile it up myself.
Keep that fury, deserter, and that strength. It will pay me well on our arrival.
Not if you don't live that long.
Tlakhev always warmed the last of the water from the bucket he used for the slaves. He'd make himself tea from it, hanging it over the fire. If Kaladin made sure he was watered last, then powdered the leaves and dropped them into the... Kaladin froze, then looked down at his hands. In his haste, he'd forgotten that he'd been holding the blackbane. He'd dropped the flakes as he slammed his hands against the bars. Only a few bits stuck to his palms. Not enough to be potent. He spun to look backward. The floor of the cage was dirty and covered with grime. If the flakes had fallen there was no way to collect them. The wind gathered suddenly, blowing dust, crumbs, and dirt out of the wagon and into the night.
Even in this, I fail.
He sank down, his back to the bars, and bowed his head, defeated. That cursed windspren kept darting around him, looking confused.
A man stood on a cliffside and watched his homeland fall into dust. The water surged beneath, so far beneath, and he heard a child crying. They were his own tears.
Collected on the 4th of Tenatus, year 1171, 30 seconds before death. Subject was a cobbler of some renown.
Cabranth, City of Bells, was not a place that Shallan had ever imagined she would visit. Though she'd often dreamed of traveling, she'd expected to spend her early life sequestered in her family's manor, only escaping through the books of her father's library. She'd expected to marry one of her father's allies, then spend the rest of her life sequestered in his manor. But expectations were like fine pottery. The harder you held them, the more likely they were to crack. She found herself breathless, clutching her leather-bound drawing pad to her chest as longshoremen pulled the ship into the dock. Cabranth was enormous. Built up the side of a steep incline, the city was wedge-shaped, as if it were built into a wide crack, with the open side toward the ocean. The buildings were blocky, with square windows, and appeared to have been constructed of some kind of mud or daub.
Creme, perhaps?
They were painted bright colors. Reds and oranges most often, but occasionally blues and yellows, too. She had to strain her neck to look up toward the city's loftiest rim. Cabranth was like a mountain towering over her. How many people lived in a place like this?
Thousands? Tens of thousands?
She shivered again, daunted yet excited, then blinked pointedly, fixing the image of the city in her memory. Sailors rushed about. The Wind's Pleasure was a narrow, single-masted vessel, barely large enough for her, the captain, his wife, and the half-dozen crew. It had seemed so small at first, but Captain Tosbeck was a calm and cautious man, an excellent sailor, even if he was a pagan. He'd guided the ship with care along the coast, always finding a sheltered cove to ride out high storms. The captain oversaw the work as the men secured the mooring. Tosbeck was a short man, even-shouldered with Shallan, and he wore his long white Thalen eyebrows up in a curious spiked pattern. It was like he had two waving fans above his eyes, a foot long each. He wore a simple knit cap and a silver-buttoned black coat. She'd imagined him getting that scar on his jaw in a furious sea battle with pirates. The day before, she'd been disappointed to hear it had been caused by loose tackle during rough weather. His wife, Ashley, was already walking down the gangplank to register their vessel. The captain saw Shallan inspecting him, and so walked over. He was a business connection of her family's, long trusted by her father. That was good, since the plan she and her brothers had concocted had contained no place for her bringing along a lady-in-waiting nurse. The plan made Shallan very nervous, very, very nervous. She hated being duplicitous. But the financial state of her house, they either needed a spectacular infusion of wealth or some other edge in local Vaden house politics. Otherwise, they wouldn't last the year.
First things first. Find Yavna Kolin. Assuming she hasn't moved off without you again.
I've sent a lad on your behalf, Brightness. If the princess is still here, we shall soon know.
Shallan nodded gratefully, still clutching her drawing pad. Out in the city, there were people everywhere. Some wore familiar clothing, trousers and shirts that laced up the front for the men, skirts and colorful blouses for the women. Those could have been from her homeland, Yaakoved, but Cabranth was a free city. A small, politically fragile city-state, it held little territory, but had docks open to all ships that passed, and it asked no questions about nationality or status. People flowed to it. That meant many of the people she saw were exotic. Those single sheet wraps would mark a man or woman from Tashik, far to the west. the long coats enveloping down to the ankles, but open in the front like cloaks. Where were those from? She'd rarely seen so many parshmen as she noted working the docks, carrying cargo on their backs. Like the parshmen her father had owned, these were stout and thick of limb, with their old marbled skin, some parts pale or black, others a deep crimson. The mottled pattern was unique to each individual. After chasing Yasna Kolin from town to town for the better part of 6 months, Shallan was beginning to think she'd never catch the woman.
Is the princess avoiding me?
No, that didn't seem likely.
I'm just not important enough to wait for.
Brightness Yasna Kolin was one of the most powerful women in the world, and one of the most infamous. She was the only member of a faithful royal house who was a professed heretic. Shallan tried not to grow anxious. Most likely, they'd discover that Yasna had moved on again. The Wind's Pleasure would dock for the night, and Shallan would negotiate a price with the captain, steeply discounted because of her family's investments in Tozbeck shipping business, to take her to the next port. Already, they were months past the time when Tozbeck had expected to be rid of her. She'd never sensed resentment from him. His honor and loyalty kept him agreeing to her requests. However, his patience wouldn't last forever, and neither would her money. She'd already used over half the spheres she'd brought with her. He wouldn't abandon her in an unfamiliar city, of course, but he might regretfully insist on taking her back to Vedanar.
Captain!
A sailor rushed up the gangplank. He wore only a vest and loose baggy trousers and had the darkly tanned skin of one who worked in the sun.
No message, sir. Doc Registrar says that Yasna has not left yet.
The hunt is over.
Bless the heralds.
The captain smiled, flamboyant eyebrows looking like streaks of light coming from his eyes.
It must be your beautiful face that brought us this favorable wind. The Windspren themselves were entranced by you, Brightness Shallan, and led us here.
Shallan blushed, considering a response that wasn't particularly proper.
Ah, I can see you have a reply. I see it in your eyes, young miss. Spit it out. Words aren't meant to be kept inside, you see. They are free creatures, and if locked away, will unsettle the stomach.
It's not polite.
Months of travel, and still you claim that. I keep telling you that we're sailors. We forget how to be polite the moment we first set foot on a ship. We're far beyond redemption now.
She smiled. She'd been trained by stern nurses and tutors to hold her tongue. Unfortunately, her brothers had been even more determined in encouraging her to do the opposite. She'd made a habit of entertaining them with witty comments when nobody else was near. She thought fondly of hours spent by the crackling great room hearth, the younger three of her four brothers huddled around her, listening as she made sport of their father's newest sycophant or a traveling ardent. She'd often fabricated silly versions of conversations to fill the mouths of people they could see, but not hear. That had established in her what nurses had referred to as an insolent streak. And the sailors were even more appreciative of a witty comment than her brothers had been.
Well, I was just thinking this. You say that my beauty coaxed the winds to deliver us to Carbranth with haste. But wouldn't that imply that on other trips my lack of beauty was to blame for us arriving late? So in reality, you're telling me I'm beautiful precisely 1/6 of the time.
Nonsense. Young miss, you are like morning sunrise, you are.
Like a sunrise? By that you mean entirely too crimson.
She pulled at her long red hair.
And prone to making men grouchy when they see me?
All right, then. You're like a flower.
I'm allergic to flowers.
He raised an eyebrow.
No, really. I think they're quite captivating. But if you were to give me a bouquet, you'd soon find me in a fit so energetic that it would have you searching the walls for stray freckles I might have blown free with the force of my sneezes.
Well, be that true, I still say you're as pretty as a flower.
If I am, then young men my age must be afflicted with the same allergy, for they keep their distance from me noticeably. Now see, I told you this wasn't polite. Young women should not act in such an irritable way.
Ah, young miss. The lads and I will miss your clever tongue. I'm not sure what we'll do without you.
Sail, likely. And eat and sing and watch the waves.
All the things you do now, only you shall have rather more time to accomplish all of it, as you won't be stumbling across a youthful girl as she sits on your deck sketching and mumbling to herself. But you have my thanks, Captain, for a trip that was wonderful, if somewhat exaggerated in length.
He tipped his cap to her in acknowledgement. Shallan grinned. She hadn't expected being out on her own to be so liberating. Her brothers had worried that she'd be frightened. They saw her as timid because she didn't like to argue and remained quiet when large groups were talking. And perhaps she was timid. Being away from Yaakoved was daunting, but it was also wonderful. She'd filled 3 sketchbooks with pictures of the creatures and people she'd seen. And while her worry over her house's finances was a perpetual cloud, it was balanced by the sheer delight of experience. Tosbeck began making dock arrangements for his ship. He was a good man. As for his praise of her supposed beauty, she took that for what it was, a kind of overstated mark of affection. She was paled skin in an era when a lethy tan was seen as the mark of true beauty, and though she had light blue eyes, her impure family line was manifest in her auburn red hair. Not a single lock of proper black. Her freckles had faded as she reached young womanhood, heralds be blessed, but there were still some visible, dusting her cheeks and nose.
Young miss, your brightness Yasna, she'll undoubtedly be at the conclave, you see.
Oh, where the Palinaeum is?
Yes, yes, and the king lives there too. It's the center of the city, so to speak, except it's on the top. Well, anyway, brightness Yasna Colin is sister to a king. She will stay nowhere else, not in Carbranth. Yalb here will show you the way. We can deliver your trunk later.
Many thanks, Captain. Shelor Mkabat Nor.
The winds have brought us safely. A phrase of thanks in the Thalen language.
Mukai Bade for Tenthis.
She had no idea what that meant. Her Thalen was quite good when she was reading, but hearing it spoken was something else entirely. She smiled at him, which seemed the proper response, for he gestured to one of his sailors.
We'll wait here in this dock for 2 days. There is a high storm coming tomorrow, you see, so we cannot leave. If the situation with the brightness Yasna does not proceed as hoped, we'll take you back to Yaakoved.
Thank you again.
Tis nothing, young miss. Nothing but what we'd be doing anyway. We can take on goods here and all. Besides, that's a right nice likeness of my wife you gave me for my cabin. Right nice.
He strode over to Yalb, giving him instructions. Shallan waited, putting her drawing pad back into her leather portfolio. Yalb. The name was difficult for her Vaden tongue to pronounce. Why were the Thalen so fond of mashing letters together without proper vowels? Yalb waved for her. She moved to follow.
Be careful with yourself, lass. Even a safe city like Harbrant hides dangers. Keep your wits about you.
I should think I'd prefer my wits inside my skull, Captain. If I kept them about me instead, then someone has gotten entirely too close to my head with a cudgel.
The captain waved her farewell as she made her way down the gangplank, holding the railing with her free hand. Like all Voren women, she kept her left hand, her safe hand, covered, exposing only her free hand. Common dark-eyed women would wear a glove, but a woman of her rank was expected to show more modesty than that. In her case, she kept her safe hand covered by the oversized cuff of her left sleeve, which was buttoned closed. The dress was of a traditional Voren cut, form-fitting through the bust, shoulders, and waist, with a flowering skirt below. It was blue silk, with chul shells buttoned up the sides, and she carried her satchel by pressing it to her chest with her safe hand while holding the railing with her free hand. She stepped off the gangplank into the furious activity of the docks, messengers running this way and that, women in red coats tracking cargoes on ledgers. Carbranth was a Voren kingdom, like Alethkar, and like Shallan's own Yaakoved. They weren't pagans here, and writing was a feminine art. Men learned only glyphs, leaving letters and reading to their wives and sisters. She hadn't asked, but she was certain Captain Tosbeck could read. She'd seen him holding books. It had made her uncomfortable. Reading was an unseemly trait in a man, at least men who weren't ardents.
You want a ride?
Yes, please.
Yalb nodded and rushed off, leaving her on the dock, surrounded by a group of Parshmen who were laboriously moving wooden crates from one pier to another. Parshmen were thick-witted, but they made excellent workers, never complaining, always doing as they were told. Her father had preferred them to regular slaves.